What is crackling, everybody? Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look back at what has gone down so far in Week 14 through Sunday night and letting you know all the takeaways we have from an NFL DFS perspective. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, we had the Derrick Henry game. We had the Amari Cooper game. We had Juju blowing up, George Kittle setting records. So how you doing today?
Despite all that, I'm underwhelmed just looking at the main slate for next week. So I'm already in a down mood, and I think it's time that we look past all the good that happened in Week 14 and just be depressed about Week 15 already.
No, because okay, oh, so the main slate is not great objectively, but we do get to watch both Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold on Saturday in semi island games. That can be exciting, right? Right. Little Deshaun Hamilton action on Saturday night with the hammer there. These Chargers on Thursday, that should be good at least.
Yeah, but I mean, with like Game Pass, I don't really watch the island games live. I just watch them and save the time. So
yeah, I don't have a life, so I totally just watch them live because I have nothing else to do. So it's It's also the time where I can fire off my worst tweets and no one will care because everyone else is live tweeting. So like no one notices when you have terrible tweets. So it's it's a good
buffer. I don't tweet. Yeah, I don't tweet enough for that. So
yeah, I do. Unfortunately. So I think it's a good week in that sense. The main slate right now doesn't look very good. We'll dig more into that on Thursday though. And hopefully week 14 was good for you. But I think Brandon, the omen of the week that things would maybe get a little bit weird and have some strange performances was Thursday night with the Jags and the Titans. Derrick Henry blew up in that game. What'd you see as Marcus Mariota, Brandon, clearly got the Titans this win. Quarterback wins over everything.
Yeah, I mean, when you can run the ball as well as the Titans did, you don't need to throw it. So, I mean, you know, that's just a fact. But you
walk
know,
a fine line, Brandon.
It's not it's not often that your running back will run for 238 yards and four touchdowns on just 14 carries while playing just 24 snaps, which is exactly what Derrick Henry did. Those 24 snaps were just 40% of the Titans' plays. He had played fewer than 40% of the snaps for seven straight games, up until he hit 49% in week 12, 41% in week 13. So, you know, the snaps are still a concern. He's not really playing even half the snaps. He might have earned himself more looks, but until then, we're just sort of assuming. He did have 6 of the 8 red zone carries in this game for the Titans. Deion Lewis handled 5 targets for 39 yards, 10 carries for 13 yards. He still played 63% of the snaps after 53% and 59% the two prior weeks. If anything, it's just that the timeshare is getting tighter to the point where Lewis is out of contention, but maybe I just have to hear your thoughts on Derrick Henry. I'm certainly not diving headfirst into that situation. Marcus Mariota was fine efficiency-wise. He had 0.10 passing net expected points per drop back, which is a number fire metric that shows expected points added to a team's just expected outcome, you know, actual points on the scoreboard, not fantasy points. But the league average, 0.12. Again, Mariota, 0.10. So just shy of that. Had an above average success rate of 56% on his 24 attempts. Compiled just 162 yards on those, though. He was over 3, throwing deep, so at least 16 yards downfield. Had a pick. He's just 25 of 53 on deep throws this year. 9.8 adjusted yards per attempt, which is below the league average there. I know you love Mariota enough for this podcast to be more positive on him, but I don't particularly still see it with Mariota, so that worries me, especially now when you factor in the uncertain target shares here. Now, Jonnu Smith is out for the season with an MCL, which could open things up a little, but Titans sort of have competition for targets. Taywan Taylor led with 7 targets. Lewis had 5. Tajay Sharp had a catchless 4 targets. And Corey Davis was held to 2 catches on 3 targets for 21 yards. According to Pro Football Focus, he had 1 target against Jalen Ramsey, AJ Boye, and DJ Hayden. But Davis's target share has been thinned out to 24% in six post-bye games. His red zone share is down to 23%, tied with Deion Lewis for the team lead. Still getting deep looks, 40% of those, but he's not the target monster that he had been all year. And with Taywan Taylor and Tajay Sharp in the mix the past 2 weeks, it's actually Taylor who leads with 12 targets. Sharp and Davis have 10. Combine all that with a low volume, kind of low value pass offense. I can't trust anyone in this offense. They are at the Giants in week 15, but again, I'm not particularly high on the Titans. The Jaguars here scored just 9 points. Leonard Fournette did play a season high 77.5% of the snaps in this game after a suspension. He played 52% and 50%, 43% when he was ejected the past 3 weeks, so it was a big deviation for him there. He had 14 of the 15 running back carries and 3 targets as well. He's got a great touch per snap rate, but he is still just sort of tied to an offense that can't really move the ball. It's kind of like a more expensive Adrian Peterson with a higher snap rate.
And a higher target share.
Right, to be fair, but it's still not really something that we should be paying up for blindly. Cody Kessler, not great. Lost 11.7 points on sacks. 8 of his throws were deep, at least. He was 0-for-3 to Dante Moncrief. 2-for-2 to D.D. Westbrook. Westbrook did have 2 of the 4 end zone targets. Moncrief had 1. In week 14, each had 10 targets. Westbrook had the better game, doubling up Moncrief in yardage. But, I mean, you can dig and dig into this offense, but there's just not enough for me personally, other than potentially Leonard Fournette in the right game script. But Moncrief and Westbrook sort of cannibalize each other, and everybody else is kind of out. I don't like to dismiss entire offenses, but...
I mean, when that offense actively wants to not throw, I think it's okay to dismiss them. And I love Cody Kessler, but he's not good. So, like, that's fine. What about Derrick Henry for you? I agree with you that there's still some pretty major concerns, but I also agree with what you said where he may have earned additional looks. So they are on the road against the Giants next week. What is an appropriate price for you? Name that price on Derrick Henry.
I mean, I always approach these situations as if I don't know anything, because I don't. And, you know, Derrick Henry could come out and play 80% of the snaps because he earned them, or he could play his usual 40% or, you know, 50%. And I just don't really love guessing. So I'm not going to get overextended on Derrick Henry, but knowing what he can do, I would go maybe 65 as like the top, but I would feel much more comfortable, at around 6,000. But
yeah, I was going to say 63. So I think we're in the same realm, but he's 61. So I think he's not the archetype player I could ever tolerate in cash games. Because if they get behind, which they could, I mean, the Giants offense is playing pretty well, like they could get behind, and in which case he is dust. So, like, I think he's tournament viable at that price, but not necessarily someone we need to actively target. Are you on board with that?
Yeah, I'm not actively targeting Derrick Henry.
Yeah, that's probably for the best. I think that's not a bad spot for Mariota, who is 71. I know that you're not as high on him, but he's still had at least 21.8 FanDuel points, I think, 4 of his last 6 games. Yeah, 4 of his past 6. So, like, I'll take that personally. For week 14 in the Number Fire Podcast Network free roll, I'm Just Tired. What an appropriate handle for this time of the year. Took home the top prize with a score of 198.68. They blew up in the afternoon games with big days out of Juju Smith-Schuster, some guy named Amari Cooper, and George Kittle. For that, they get 3 free months of Number Fire premium access and a boatload of free FanDuel points to be used on entries. If you want to get into the Week 15 contest, just check out Thursday's preview podcast. Listen for the URL after the injuries segment. If you want to get that preview pod, just subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Let's move on here to the Patriots at Dolphins. The Dolphins won this game on a crazy, crazy lateral play by Kenyon Drake and Kenny Stills and Devontae Parker, but Drake still had just 6 carries and 1 target. Frank Gore had 12 carries and 1 target, so you can continue to ignore this backfield despite the big play. The Dolphins aren't a total wasteland, though, anymore, because Kenny Stills popped. He had 9 of 19 targets, turned those into 135 receiving yards. with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback this year, Stills does have 21% of the team's overall targets, 41% of the deep targets, and 18% of the red zone targets. The Dolphins are frustrating due to a lack of play volume, but if they're in a decent spot, I'm not opposed to using Stills. It's worth monitoring that Tannehill did injure his ankle in this game, so something to keep an eye on this week. But if Tannehill keeps playing, I think that there is at least some juice there with Kenny Stills. On the Patriots side, Tom Brady showed again that the improved health of his offense has him back to playing really good football again. He had 22.05 passing net expected points in the game, easily the most he has had the entire season long. He has 15 or more net expected points in three straight games, and those are his three highest marks of the year. They got Gronk back. They got Sonny Michel back. They got Rex Burkhead back, and the offensive line is healthy. We've got to buy high on him and this offense in DFS. And with Brady, you know, improving, we've also seen a concentrated target tree for the Patriots, which is not something we have had all year long. Rob Gronkowski, Josh Gordon, and Julian Edelman all had at least 8 targets and 86 receiving yards. In the three games since their bye week with all these guys healthy, Edelman leads with 25% of the targets. Gronk is at 19%, and Gordon is at 16%. Edelman doesn't have any deep targets. He still had some yardage upside, and he had deep targets earlier this year, so I'm not super concerned about that. But Josh Gordon has 4 deep targets. Gronk has 3. If we go to the red zone, it's 30% there for Edelman, 25% to Gronk, and 10% to Gordon. So I think our previous assessment of this receiver corpse was correct. Edelman's getting enough yardage and touchdown upside to be viable in both cash games and tournaments. Gronk and Gordon are in play for just tournaments, and I'm higher on Gordon now than I was entering the week, though he does need a good cornerback matchup for me to use him. He did have that here with Xavier Howard out, but if he does face a tough outside corner, I'd be willing to divest at that point. Sonny Michel took command of the early down work here in the second week with Rex Burkhead back. Michel had 20 of 29 running back carries, a much better ratio than he had last week. Burkhead and White both had 4 carries. White had just 4 targets, so I'm out on him. I don't think there's enough juice there for him to be viable. Burkhead had 2 targets, so he's not in play, so that leaves Michel. But Michel also lost another goal line carry to James Devlin, and he didn't get any targets. The snap rates were almost exactly the same as they were last week with Michel at 42%, White at 40%, and Burkhead at 21%. So it's the same here with Michel, where you can use him if they're big favorites in a great matchup, but that is the lone situation in which I would be willing to use Sony Michel next week on the road in Pittsburgh. Probably not going to be that spot unless Ben Roethlisberger can't play, but it seems like he probably will. So probably no Patriots backs for me. Brandon, I want to talk to you about the Patriots receivers and Tom Brady. Have you seen enough on Brady where you believe in this offense you can accept some not necessarily overly robust target shares for the pass catchers?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of always the situation with the Patriots where they don't give anybody a 30% target share. They don't really even give anybody, you know, a 27% target share, which sounds like a small difference, but
it's a difference.
But we talked about it on the preview podcast this week, and Tom Brady's still been efficient. It feels like he's not. It feels like he's not the same quarterback, but when you adjust for what he's doing, you know, if you look at expected points added rather than just touchdown totals and yards, you can see that he's moving the ball. If you adjust for opponent, he's moving the ball. And, you know, you factor that in with the health, the increased health of this team. I'm back in. And Rob Gronkowski gets a pretty good matchup next week.
Name that price on Gronk. 18% of the targets, but he's had some deep looks and he's had a good amount of red zone work since this bye week. So name that price on Gronk against the Steelers next week.
He's not Gronk of old, but correct. He should be probably at least 7,000.
And for next week, Rob Gronkowski is $6,900.
Yeah, by the way, speaking of 69.
Oh, you're talking about the play?
Yeah, why was Rob Gronkowski out there?
Well, because Ryan Tannehill has he's like Jamarcus Russell on his knees, where he can actually throw it 98 yards in the air. I have no idea. is my
I'm not an NFL coach. I'm not Bill Belichick. I'm not making decisions, but like, in what world was he going to just knock down a Hail Mary pass?
The other part of it too is they knew Tannehill was hurt. Like, he was limping before that. So like, it's one leg of Tannehill trying to chuck it 69 yards. Prob's not going to happen.
I feel bad
for Gronk because he's getting clowned because his defense made his coaching staff made a bad decision.
Yeah, and like, he got beat to the sideline. Like, he should. I mean, it was the one place where there wasn't help, and right. Just by not being a defender, he just let Kenyon Drake beat him up the sideline. I don't know, Jim.
I never get to question the Patriots coaching, Brandon. So I'm going to take this and run. I'm going to question this. Like, we don't get this right ever. It's kind of liberating, honestly. So this is a great week. This makes up for the week 15 slate being questionable at best. So we're all in here. Another quick price update. Brady is 79 for next week. Edelman, 72. Gordon, 68. Gordon does have a tough matchup next week. But Edelman, I think, is in play, and Gronk is in play for sure. Let's move on now to the Falcons at the Packers. Brandon, first game with Joe Philbin as the head coach. Got off to a weird start, but then I think Aaron Jones eventually did pull through here. What else did you see in their first game under Philbin?
Yes. Speaking of some weird coaching decisions, they blew their challenges, I think, like a minute and a half into the game.
I think it was 83 seconds. Yeah. It was.
Yeah, really they were solid challenges, but like, you kind of gotta. Yeah. If you lose the first one, you might want to save it. But he also started Jamal Williams over Aaron Jones. You would not know that if you look just at the final stats, because Jones had 17 carries for 78 yards and a touchdown. Williams had 4 for 17. Jones also had 3 of the 4 targets between them. If you look at his snaps since his breakout, he actually played a season low, 50.3% of the snaps last week, but he outsnapped Jamal Williams pretty comfortably this week, 65% to 37%. So that's a very good sign for Jones, but a 65% snap rate is not just sort of a high enough rate where we plug him in blindly and don't worry at all. Aaron Rodgers was fine here, 21 of 32 for 196 yards and 2 touchdowns. It was just 6.1 yards per attempt. He did have 44 rushing yards, but he had below average metrics this week. He's been kind of exactly league average this season. I know that he's got a knee that's been there all season, but he's not doing enough to carry this entire offense to fantasy relevancy. The only kind of constant has been Davante Adams, who scored again in this game. He had 11 targets, 7 catches, 81 yards. He has 17 deep targets over his past 5 games. He's had at least 3 deep targets in all 5 of those. He has 41% of the air yards, 29% of the overall targets in 7 post-bye games. So he is just pretty much, he's been matchup proof, and he's got one of the best workloads in football among wide receivers. And 2 games back for Randall Cobb, Adams still was at a 30.4% target share. So I have no real issues with Davante Adams. Jimmy Graham is second since Randall Cobb came back with a 20.3% target share. He had 11 and 5 targets in those 2 games, but he hasn't had a red zone target since week 9, but he has had 3 deep targets the past 2 weeks. Cobb himself has had 5 and 6 targets, just a 13.9% target share to rank third. So really, outside of Adams, there's nobody else we can look to with any sort of confidence. And they do play in Chicago in week 15, which is problematic, but I still think that Adams is a low-owned tournament play in that spot. Matt Ryan here threw 42 times, 262 yards, 3 touchdowns. He's been very efficient outside of a few predictable down games this year. He again featured Julio Jones after a big dud last week against Baltimore. Jones had 8 catches on 11 targets for 106 yards and 2 touchdowns. He is at a 26.5% target share, 49% of the air yards in 6 post-bye games for Jones. He's had at least 18.3 FanDuel points in 5 of those 6 outings. He's just sort of a beast with a high yardage floor. And he also has 8 red zone targets since week 10, a 31% red zone share. They're kind of sporadic. It's weird. He gets like 3 red zone targets in a game and then doesn't get targeted in other games, but It certainly worked out this week. Now, after Jones, Mohamed Sanu had 8 targets. Austin Hooper had 6. Calvin Ridley, Justin Hardy, and Ito Smith had 4. Since Sanu's snaps went back up in Week 10, he has a 15% target share, so 6 targets per game for him. No red zone targets since Week 10, but he did have an end zone target this week. Calvin Ridley, since Sanu's resurgence, is at a 15.4% target share, 2 red zone targets. There's just kind of not enough after Julio to trust any of the receivers, and it's actually Austin Hooper who's second in target share in that split at 17.4%. Hooper's always kind of fine in good spots, but other than that, it's just really Jones for me among the pass catchers. The backfield is just a mess. The snaps were very even. Tevin Coleman played 47%. Ito Smith played 45%. Smith had 11 carries. Coleman had 10. Smith also had 4 targets to just 1 for Coleman. So, again, it's really just Julio for me for the Falcons. Hooper in somewhat decent spots, which he is in a good spot next week against the Cardinals.
Yeah, I think the backfield is spread out enough where even in good spots, I just don't want to guess. Fine missing out there. I want to talk to you about Aaron Jones. 65% snap rate. That's lower than he was before that big that down game last week, but it's still above. It's better than it was.
Right.
So Aaron Jones on the road next week against Green Bay, that's a game where the Packers very easily could fall behind. Is that a game script in which you can see yourself using Aaron Jones?
Yeah, I mean, Chicago just showed a lot this week. They're at home again. I don't particularly see myself doing anything with Aaron Jones outside of some game stacks, but the Chicago offense, as I'll talk about later, not exactly stackable.
Nope, they're not. I agree. I think that you can use them in turn. It's kind of like, so it's analogous to Nick Chubb against the Texans 2 weeks ago, where it was a viable tournament play, but just in sprinkles. And I think that's where Jones would likely be for that one. So you can invest, just definitely not a cash game play. Let's move on here to the Giants at Washington and Brandon. My goodness, even without Odell Beckham, the Giants just destroyed it here. Saquon Barkley was largely to thank for that. He had 14 carries and 6 targets. He turned those into 197 yards and a touchdown. He had a 78 burger there as well. The efficiency for Barkley hasn't always been there, but it has been on the rise since they brought in Jamon Brown to play right guard. The success rate for Barkley is a little bit below average, but he's averaging 6.2 yards per attempt in that time. So the ceiling has already been high for Barkley and it will remain high. But it seems like the floor is getting a bit of a boost as well. They're facing the Titans next week, and that's a good rush defense, but it's a defense we can still exploit. So Barkley is a tremendous cash game and tournament play for next week. Seems like Beckham should be back next week, which puts some cold water on a decent day for Evan Engram. He had 5 targets. He looked good on those targets, had a couple of big plays. The snapper is back up to 52%, which is better than it was before, but it's also hard to get a true read on that, because even Barkley played just 48% of the snaps. So I am monitoring Engram, but not likely to use him, especially with OBJ coming back. Sterling Shepard, 17 yards here. He had a touchdown, but he's not a trustworthy asset, no matter what pieces may be missing the offense. So it's okay to disregard him. It is Saquon, OBJ, and then monitoring Engram for this team. For Washington, Mark Sanchez got benched after just 19 dropbacks, but he managed to lose more than 20 net expected points, which is impressive. Josh Johnson came in and looked decent, but that game was also over by the time he came in. A lot of the Giants starters were out. I would not put any value into what he did. Chris Thompson is back, meaning it's a 2-person backfield. Jordan Reed got hurt during the game and did not return. You should not be using players on this team. You should use defenses against them. And that's it. I will dismiss this team 100%. They are too banged up. I don't want to go there. Brandon, I want to go to you with Evan Engram. I'm personally a bit skeptical still. Any takeaways for you from him here, or are we good to just monitor and move on?
I mean, he's a good talent. We know that. But the opportunity hasn't really been there, especially with Odell Beckham healthy. Mm-hmm. He's kind of been an afterthought, and they play Tennessee next week. They're a good tight end defense.
All righty, let's move on here to the Colts and the Texans. Brandon, this game did live up to the fun angle of it from a true football perspective. T.Y. Hilton, had an awesome day. Not quite the fantasy day we were expecting from the quarterbacks, but still a fun game overall. I enjoyed this game. What'd you see here between the Colts and the Texans?
Yeah, it was fun for sure. But you know, T.Y. Hilton was questionable sort of to play with this. He's got a shoulder injury, but you just wouldn't know it because he went off. He always seems to go off.
I want to see him healthy.
Like, he's so good.
Yeah.
Well, he's great when he plays indoors, at least.
Yes.
I can say that much. Yes. But 199 yards on 12 targets. Since his snaps went back up after an injury, so from week 8 on, he's had a 26.2% target share, so 9.3 targets per game, with 37.6% of the air yards, 42% of the deep targets, almost 21% of the red zone targets. He's had 5 straight games with at least 9.2 fantasy points, which isn't necessarily a lot for his price, but that is a pretty high floor. And for the ceiling that he can provide, it's well worth it. So arrows pointing up on T.Y. Hilton for sure, especially, you know, if he gets healthier without that shoulder injury. But again, I mean, he seemed to be just okay in this week. Andrew Luck has been solid this season, which, you know, isn't always the case for him from a metric standpoint. He's had just 7.08 yards per attempt, but 0.21 passing net expected points per drop back. So well above league average there. And that's kind of despite just a at least a very thin pass catcher roster and some injuries throughout the year. Eric Ebron had 8 targets here. He caught 4 for 65 yards and a touchdown. He had 16 targets last week, giving him 25.6% of the targets in 2 games. Without Jack Doyle, his snaps have also been up 71%, 76 and 67 this week. So as far as tight ends go, he has one of the best situations in the league. The backfield, I can't really go here. I'm not really that big of a Marlon Mack guy. He had 14 carries, 33 yards and a touchdown. Didn't catch his one target. Played 59.7% of the snaps, which was close to his season high of 62.8, but that is not a workhorse role. He's averaged just 13 opportunities over his past 5. If you double the targets, because they're worth basically twice a carry, still just 16.2 adjusted opportunities because he just doesn't get a whole lot of receiving work. You know, when the Colts are favored, he's still viable. He gets about 70% of the carries among running backs since week 10, but not necessarily a lock to get all the red zone work. Nyheim Hines mixes in there, and I'm just not going to trust him next week when they host the surging Cowboys. Deshaun Watson threw extra in this game. He threw 38 times after averaging 24.6 attempts in 7 games entering. So we talked about that game quite a bit on the preview pod. The attempts were up, but just didn't do much with it. 267 yards, 42% success rate, took 5 sacks. He did actually lead the team with 35 rushing yards, and he's averaged 31.6 rushing yards per game this season. Still at 18.2 fantasy points here. So, you know, we talked about it also. He can still have a ceiling. It's just that, you know, he's only cracked 2 passing touchdowns once all season, has 7 games with just 1 passing touchdown. So as much as I want to buy in on Deshaun Watson, it's a little bit hard to go all out on Watson. DeAndre Hopkins, though, led in targets as usual. He had 10, but was held in check. Just 4 catches and 36 yards. Did score, though. He had 4 red zone targets. Since the week 9 arrival of Demaryius Thomas and the loss of Will Fuller, he's got 53.4% of the air yards, almost 35% of the targets, 9.2 per game for him. So even with the low volume, the target share has been high enough for Hopkins to do what he normally does, but the results just haven't necessarily been there the past 4 weeks. Second on the team in that span is Demaryius Thomas. He's got a 15% target share, had 6 targets Sunday for just 48 yards. He has just 1 game this year with more than 63. That came back with Denver. Did run 47 of the 50 routes. You know, you can do worse than Thomas, but you can also do so much better, especially if Kiki Cutie can return soon. In the backfield here, Lamar Miller had 6 targets as well as 14 carries, 14 of the 20 running back carries, but you know, he's actually split the 6 red zone carries the past 2 weeks with Alfred Blue. There's kind of a 50-50 split last week, but Miller did play 71% of the snaps this week. But against the Jets next week, it's not really a week where I want to target them. They're not on the main slate, but that means we're going to have to get a little bit creative and look at this team on that two-game slate.
Yuck. Let's talk about the Colts instead, because I'd just rather do that.
That's fine. That's fine.
T.Y. Hilton going back home. We've seen the upside really be there. What's the name that prize from T.Y. Hilton at home against Dallas next week, which honestly may be the most exciting game on the slate outside of Patriots and Steelers?
Well, if they're playing Dallas, they're going to be able to run about 8 plays, have the ball for about 4 seconds.
It hasn't been as bad this year.
No, but Dallas just can control the clock for sure.
They haven't been as soul-sucking as usual.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But they have kind of limited receiver production. They were 24th in slot points per target allowed entering this week, but they kind of just capped the ceiling of Hilton, so I'm a little bit worried. I don't actually know what his price was this week, but he's probably going to go
76.
He's going to go up then. I can't pay like $8,000 for Hilton, I don't think.
Because he had 199 yards this past week, so...
Oh, okay. That's the checklist.
I mean, he has stupid upside, especially at home. And like Byron Jones doesn't travel, and he's kind of the one, like I respect the Dallas defense, but like from a receiver perspective, the one guy I really fear is Byron Jones. So I think I could go like 82 on T.Y. Hilton. He is $7,900.
I'm going to play him because I'm going to stack that game, but I still worry.
So I made a mistake, and I click on the game, the specific game for next week, to see what various players' prices are. Because I don't want to spoil other games, but when I do that, it also shows me Dallas's prices, and I looked at Amari Cooper's price.
No, you got to search. You got to like search. No, type it in.
No.
All right.
No. can we just play name that price in Amari Cooper right now?
He was 69 this week. I know that.
Uh huh.
77?
66. That's why it, like, shocked me. Like, I stopped dead when I saw it. I'd assume the slate must have been released before the end of that game. Like, if it was released, like, midway through the third quarter, I get it, because he wasn't doing a whole lot then. I think he had, like, 3.2 points or something.
Okay.
So... He's going to be 40% owned next week, right?
Yeah. He's cool. Going to be...
High ownership from Amari Cooper has never gone.
He's going to be almost 80% owned in head-to-heads, if not higher.
High ownership from Amari Cooper has never gone wrong, so I don't see any issue with this. Michael Gallup's 53. So
well, they're actually throwing him the ball. So
that's true. We'll get back to that later on. We'll take a look at Jets and Bills in a second. But first, got to let you know about a new... Never before seen slate added to FanDuel's offerings that is second half only. That is right. It is half the game, but all of the fantasy. Is your team not doing so hot because you had Jared Goff in your MVP slot on Sunday Night Football? I would know nothing about that. Or maybe you know you got a big win in the bag and you want to double down on your lineup. Well, now you can draft a brand new team for just the second half of a single NFL game. To find the available half slates, just select the single game NFL game style and look through the slate options. It is just one more way to win on FanDuel. So you're playing Monday night, watch Monday night with the Vikings and the Seahawks, and you want to get in on that, just go to the FanDuel lobby, click on single game, and scroll through these slates. Let's move on here to the Jets and the Bills. I actually enjoyed watching this game, Brandon, which is depressing, but it's
true.
No, it's true. I actually did enjoy this game. It was really fun. LeSean McCoy left early.
Sure it was.
No, I'm being 100% okay.
All right.
Serious.
All right, yeah.
100% serious.
Okay.
It was really fun. Chris Ivory got hurt late. Just ignore the backfield. But it was another very Josh Allen game, which I think is why it was fun. He came through for fantasy because he ran for 101 yards and a touchdown. He now has 99 or more rushing yards in all three games since returning from his elbow injury, which is just unreal. But the Jets, to their credit, adjusted at halftime and held him to 2 rushes for 14 yards in the second half, and Allen was terrible as a passer. He finished with negative 3.35 passing net expected points, bringing him down to negative 26.89 for the full season. The second half showed the risk of Allen in fantasy. If a team commits to stopping him as a rusher, he's not going to come through as a passer. So the ceiling is there if his legs get him loose, but the floor is still abysmal. So invest with caution. I know it worked out here, but just be sure, be aware of the fact that this floor is still very low. In the first game without Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes, the targets were a bit more concentrated, which is good. Zay Jones had 9 targets, turned them into just 22 yards. Robert Foster had 104 yards on 8 targets, and Isaiah McKenzie had 7. McKenzie also had 4 rush attempts and scored on a handoff. Jones had 2 deep targets and 2 in the red zone. Foster led with 96% of the snaps. Jones at 91, McKenzie at 78, so things were concentrated, and we do like that. I'd be most willing to take a shot on Jones here, but Foster has proven to have some upside. Seems like he can get down the field. Jones had upside last week. It's just hard to really trust anybody with how much Allen has struggled and how willing the Bills are to just not throw if they're in the right scenario. So if I had to rank them, I'd probably go Jones over Foster over McKenzie, but all these guys have really bad floors. They do have a ceiling too, which is something to consider, but the floor is non-existent. Sam Darnold had some good and some bad, but he's, no matter what, he's a clear upgrade over Josh McCown. He had a really bad throw at one point in the game. It was like across his body. He was terrible. But overall, he still finished with 7.46 net expected points. That's the third best game by a Jets quarterback all year, and all those have been by Darnold. He will throw picks, so you can consider defenses facing them, but everybody on this offense gets a boost up with Darnold back compared to McCown. Right before the injury, Darnold had been developing a rapport with Robbie Anderson, and it seemed like that carried over here. Anderson had 7 of 24 targets, including 2 deep and 4 of 5 red zone targets. Anderson came through on that volume too, which doesn't hurt. Nobody else had more than 4 targets. I'm willing to buy in here because I would doubt this game gets a lot of pub for the Jets, so I don't think the ownership will be super inflated. So in plus matchups, the Darnold-Anderson stack, to me at least, is very much in play. Isaiah Crowell was hurt entering the game. He also left early, which paved the way for Elijah McGuire to get good work. He had 17 carries and 4 targets. Trenton Cannon had 5 carries and 1 target, though Cannon did get a goal line carry, which he cashed in on. And McGuire played 74% of the snaps. So if Crowell does miss time, McGuire could be very viable. He gets work in the passing game. Coaching staff likes him, so Crowell's injury will be one to monitor, especially for that Saturday-only slate. So keep an eye on Isaiah Crowell, and I think the Jets' passing offense, to me, is at least something that's in play. Brandon, I have to admit I grew up a Jets fan, so maybe it's a situation where I am viewing this one a bit too favorably. Will you use Robbie Anderson down the stretch, or are Sam Darnold's struggles enough to keep you away?
There's a lot that just keeps me away. I think that there's a lot of value in just targeting teams, or at least avoiding teams that are messy and can easily bust and just not have much upside or production. And I know you can't avoid that entirely in DFS, but guys like Robbie Anderson, I don't think are just sort of long-term good plays to make consistently. So it's just sprinkles for guys like this.
That's, I think, about sprinkles it. Is fair. I think that's, I would never build my core around him, but I also don't build my core around any wide receiver. So that's partially it. But I think I'm interested. Bill's defense has been very good this year. Darnold wasn't bad, especially late in the game. He had, again, bad throws. So defenses are still going to be in play, but he's very Jameis-esque, I think is the way to put it for Darnold. So
like on the 2-game slate, for Saturday, Baker. Sure, he's absolutely. Well,
Baker.
I'm talking about Robbie Anderson, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. I was out of order, but that's a situation where it's, you can sell I can sell myself on Anderson much more, but on a full slate, it's sprinkles, and I kind of respect the Jets' perimeter defense enough where I don't even really stack the Jets game, so.
So Brandon just said he will consider the Jets on a 2-game slate, which is an improvement from last week. So the Jets are trending up. Let's go, baby. Let's move on here to the Saints and Bucks. Just mentioned Jameis. So let's talk about his team here. Brandon, weird weather conditions for this one. I think the wind speeds did go down before kickoff, so I wouldn't blame that totally. But kind of just a letdown spot here for the Saints. But hey, they clinched the NFC South. So what did you see in this one?
Yeah, pretty ugly game overall. Drew Brees wasn't good. He was 24 of 31, so completed a solid rate, but below his usual average. 201 yards, a touchdown, and interception is his second straight dud game after having thrown 3+ touchdowns in 4 straight entering last week. Salvaged it a bit with a 1 yard over the top sneak touchdown, but it hasn't been good for Breeze the past 2 weeks. But they do play the Panthers next week on the road. I'll probably go back to Breeze. He's been fine-ish on the road, about twice the league average in expected points per drop back, below average in yards per attempt, but that game is Monday night, so it's not on the main slate anyway. There was concentrated usage to Michael Thomas again, which is just sort of the case each and every week. Caught 11 of 13 targets for 98 yards. Had 3 red zone targets, 2 deep targets for him this week. 31.4% of the targets since the bye for Thomas. He has at least 30% of the red zone and deep looks as well. Just great high leverage share for Thomas, giving him weekly consistency and also a big ceiling whenever it all comes together. Traquan Smith had just 1 target this week. He's been very seldom used of late, particularly on the road, despite running almost every route this week. I mean, he's on the field a lot, running a lot of routes, but you just can't really trust anyone other than Thomas in this passing game. And, other than Thomas, it's really just Kamara who actually gets heavy and consistent targets. He's got a 17.7% post-buy target share. Kamara was also, he was out-carried 13-12 by Mark Ingram. He had 51 yards. Ingram had 52 rushing yards and a score, but Kamara did have receiving work again, caught 5 of 6 targets for 36 yards. A bit problematically, Ingram handled 5 of the 7 red zone carries between them. Since Ingram's return in week 5, Kamara has 40% of the red zone work. Ingram's about 35% in terms of the carries, but Kamara did play his usual snap rate of about 64%. Ingram was at 45%, so just pretty much identical to their usual split. I'm not changing my view really on this offense at all. It is Michael Thomas. It's Kamara in mostly tournaments. I'm not going to play him in cash with his snap rate being what it is, and I'm still willing to buy in on Breeze in the right spots. Next week they play at Carolina. Again, that's Monday Night Football, but I would still consider Breeze, especially Thomas and Kamara in that game, even if they were on the main slate, just to give some context to how I'm feeling about this offense. For the Bucs, Jameis Winston started out slinging it, but wound up 18 of 38 for 213 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. It was actually his first bad game since returning as the starter from a metric standpoint, but he did run 5 times for 47 yards to lead the team. And he's actually averaged 37.2 rushing yards in 6 games with at least a 70% snap rate. This was not the Chris Godwin game, but I mean, I think the process was there. He got 10 targets at $5,600. He had 1 catch for 13 yards, but he had a team-high 173 air yards, 3 deep targets, 1 red zone target, 2 end zone targets. Yeah, he has a 25% target share in the 2 games without DeSean Jackson the past 2 weeks. It's a solid, if not elite, workload given that price, but he plays in Baltimore next week. Adam Humphries had 8 targets here, giving him a team-high 25.4% target share over the past 2 without DeSean Jackson. He had just 42 yards receiving. He was tackled on the 1. Could have been a better game for him, but that's kind of always the case for Humphries. If he's not scoring, he's not really going to have a huge yardage ceiling generally because he doesn't get the deep looks. Mike Evans had 6 targets, 86 yards, 2 empty end zone targets for him. He had 142 air yards, so almost a 24-yard average depth of target. He has just 12 targets the past 2 games. It's an 18% target share. He's a deep threat, but it's not enough of a market share to be priced where he is. If you ask me, it was really Cameron Brate. The Cameron Brate game, he's just going to maybe catch touchdowns. I know that Jim's been higher on him, especially with him getting more deep looks without DeSean Jackson. So Brate's fine, but he's never somebody that I feel overly confident in. Peyton Barber has a fine workload, but just a 46% snap rate. I don't think anybody's playing Peyton Barber, really, and I don't think I need to talk about him much at all. Again, the Bucs play in Baltimore next week. It's a crucial game for each if you consider the fact that the Bucs at 5-8 aren't out of it, but they're not really in it.
Yeah. With Brate, I would say fine is the right word. He is better than he was without DeSean Jackson, but his yardage upside is still like 40 yards. So,
yeah. I mean, he had four targets here, so.
Hey, trending up, man. That tied his season high outside of last week, so.
Yeah.
He also had one deep target, two in the red zone. Like, he is what he is. He's hoping for a tutty. He is the 2018 version of 2017 Jimmy Graham, basically. with Kamara.
I like that.
We've been concerned about him for a while, but the reason we were able to overlook the concerns was because the offense was so good. They've been on the road the last 2 weeks. Now they go back home. Are you willing to overlook the past two games? Like, if you're playing the Thursday through Monday slate, would you overlook the past two games and have trust in Alvin Kamara?
I think they're on the road next week in Carolina.
Oh, they are?
I believe so. Yeah.
They are. You're right. So, never mind. Yeah, I think same question, though. Can you trust him given the workload they've had recently?
He's not a trust anymore with Mark Ingram back. He's going to play about 65% of the snaps. He's going to get his, you know, targets. He's going to get some work. He's going to get some red zone work. But, yeah, I mean, you have to ding this entire offense when they're on the road. But it is a good spot. I would still, like I said, I would use Kamara in tournaments. Mm-hmm. If that game were on the main slate, but he is not and hasn't been a cash game play for quite a while.
All right, in the same matchup at home, would you rather Aaron Jones or Alvin Kamara?
Alvin Kamara.
I would too, but I think that's the same tier for me. Would you agree with that or no?
It's a bit closer than I would have thought earlier in the year for sure, but
sure.
I'd still be higher on Kamara in just about any spot if they're both equal.
Alrighty, let's move on here to the Panthers and the Browns. Baker Mayfield didn't have to do a whole lot here, but he was very good when called upon, which has kind of been what he's been ever since the coaching changeover. He averaged more than 10 yards per attempt, didn't throw a pick. Since the coaching changeover, Baker is at 0.30 net expected points per dropback, with a 56% success rate. Again, that the average for net expected points per dropback is 0.12. Baker is 2.5 times that. He's playing really well, even when you include that clunker last week. We still need to judge him based on matchups and situations, but he has proven that he can come through and lift up the guys around him. Jarvis Landry scored twice. That's good. But his usage didn't really change too much outside of a couple of rush attempts. He had 4 of 23 targets. 2 of those were deep. He now has 19.7% of the team's targets since the coaching change, with 28% of the deep targets. The role did not change here, so I would be wary of getting too excited about what he did here. I think we still need to be skeptical of Jarvis Landry and his market shares. The one guy who we can feel good about, to me at least, is Nick Chubb. He had just 13 carries, but that was 13 of 15 for running backs. He also led the team with 6 targets, including his first deep target of the year. Chubb played 64% of the snaps in a game script that was neutral the entire game. He is palatable in negative game script, good in neutral game script, and great in positive. So we should still be in on this guy for sure going forward. On the Panthers side, Cam Newton got taken out for another Hail Mary attempt, and he struggled overall. Cam's 42 attempts turned into 265 yards and an interception. He was 3 of 6 on deep attempts to the pick. He has now thrown 4. I swallowed my own spit, which was weird.
I thought you were laughing.
No, I swallowed my own spit, which is, I think, recommended. It might have been a bug again, but I think it was my own spit. Anywho, Cam now has 4 picks on deep balls the past 2 games, which is suboptimal. He did still run 5 times, but he's averaging just 4.6 rush attempts per game the past 5 weeks. We should be downgrading him for fantasy, but I don't think he's playing poorly enough where we need to abandon the entire offense. And that's especially because they got guys like Christian McCaffrey. McCaffrey, 16 carries, 7 targets, 101 yards in scrimmage, 2 touchdowns. Just keep using this guy until you get a reason not to. There were a couple of big stories among the pass catchers, starting with Ian Thomas, who led the team with 11 targets. That included 2 red zone targets. None of his looks were deep, but he was getting some of those earlier in the year when Greg Olsen was out, and he played a lot of snaps, over 80%. Thomas now has five or more targets in three of four games that Olsen has missed, and he has some juice in those looks. So Thomas is very much a viable tight end option, and I would be willing to buy into what we saw from him on Sunday. Curtis Samuel was the other story here. He had eight targets. He actually had four deep targets and one in the red zone. Devin Funchess' snap rate went down from where it was last week, allowing Samuel to play 93% of the snaps, and I think he may have earned a starting role here. When you combine it with how bad Funchess has been, I think we could see Samuel continue to play a lot of snaps down the stretch, and he's got talent. DJ Moore had eight targets. He has that many or more in four straight games. So with Greg Olsen out, it seems like this passing attack is McCaffrey, DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, and Ian Thomas. Things may be spread a bit thin at times, but it seems like we can count on these guys. I'm going to rank them in that order. McCaffrey, Moore, Samuel, and Thomas. But all of them are in play, even with Cam's shoulder injury. So I really like what I've seen from the Panthers here from a usage perspective, although the team performance is bad and Cam's shoulder injury is certainly concerning. Brandon, I want to talk to you about the Browns. I am skeptical of Jarvis Landry, you know, based on this game. What about you? Am I overlooking something here?
I mean, kind of overall, the snaps had been down, like in week 10 and week... So in week 10, he played 68%. In week 12, he played 61%. Those have climbed back up to 80-plus the past 2 weeks. You know, that's something, I guess. So yeah, it's not what he was doing early in the season, if that's what you're asking, but it is a little bit better than two down weeks surrounding the bye. So I guess it's a little better, but it's still not really... you know, Jarvis of the beginning of the season. So he's kind of just fine. Not getting like you said, just he had five deep targets last week, but it's not the red zone work that he had early in the year. I'm kind of not really overly excited to play Jarvis.
It's very weird for him because it's the exact opposite of Miami, where he was getting a lot of targets but no deep targets. Now he's getting a good amount of deep looks, but he's not getting any targets overall. So I will likely avoid him next week under the assumption that his ownership will go up based on this game. But also next week is Chubb versus Chubb, Nick versus Bradley, so get hyped for that.
Are you going to – so on that two-game slate,
yeah,
because we won't talk about it on Thursday, like where are you with Landry? Is he like a full-on avoid because it's he's going
to
have high
ownership? No, I can't avoid him on that slate, unfortunately. Right. But I would like to be underweight relative to the field.
Okay.
That makes sense?
That's all I needed to know.
All right, let's move on here to the Ravens at the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes, my gosh. I know it was a tight game, but he made some stupid throws against the league's best defense. And I feel like with the struggles of Breeze and Goff, MVP discussions are stupid, but I feel like he's just like, he's clinching it. And I love Pat Mahomes. So talk me through this game here, Brandon. What did you see with the Chiefs against the Ravens?
Yeah, they hung on to win. They won the AFC West here. They won this game 27-24 in overtime. Mahomes actually did kind of just drop the ball on a scramble late in the game. It was lucky that one of the offensive linemen, I can't remember who. Yeah, but he threw 53 times for 377 yards and two touchdowns. He has at least 20 FanDuel points in eight straight games. He's averaging 28.9 in that span. He's played a really tough schedule overall, and he's just been amazing. That's really all I can say. Play Pat Mahomes if you can, and frankly, I'm seeing the case for paying up for Mahomes pretty much every week. It's kind of hard not to. Tyreek Hill had a wrist injury, it looked like, late in the first quarter, but he ended up playing 75.6% of the snaps. Ended up with 14 targets, of which he caught 8 for 139 yards. He was the first wide receiver this year with more than 91 yards against the Ravens. He had 6 deep targets, 2 red zone targets. It was a great workload for Tyreek Hill in this game. With basically, no Sammy Watkins since week 10, Hill has a 26.3% target share, which is 10 per game, with 44% of the air yards in the league's best passing offense. Travis Kelce did his thing again, caught 7 of 9 targets for 77 yards and a touchdown. He had 2 deep targets, 2 red zone targets, and an end zone target. Plays virtually every snap. He has a team-high 28.3% target share, 10.8 targets per game since the Watkins injury. That was DeMarcus Robinson, not Chris Conley, with the being third in targets. He had seven targets. He played 65% of the snaps. Conley played 99% of the snaps, but had just three targets. So as much as I want to buy in on Chris Conley, I don't think that it's a smart move, each and every week, unless we think that they're going to have to throw a ton. Even though they did this week, it just didn't lead to the targets. The Spencer Ware situation, certainly hard to figure out. He left in the second quarter with a shoulder injury. He ended up playing 47.7% of the snaps. But Damian Williams did steal a goal line touchdown from Spencer Ware. Ware did have more carries, 15 to 8. He had 75 rushing yards. Ware also had five targets for 54 yards, but Williams had five targets as well. I don't know how much of this was the injury. I don't know how much of it, it was just Damian Williams was involved early, and that scares me off of Spencer Ware. Not enough to avoid him entirely because he's still attached to a great offense, but he's certainly not somebody who I don't have concerns about. The Chiefs host the Chargers on Thursday night, so we don't really have to guess at that situation for the main slate, but it's going to be very interesting for the single game set. This was Lamar Jackson's best passing game from a metric standpoint, but the volume was still very low, just 24 attempts for him, 147 yards, two touchdowns. He ran 13 times for 71 yards, so that gives him 16 or more FanDuel points in all four of his starts. He has at least 71 rushing yards in all four of those, averaging 83.5 rushing yards per game. He did leave with an ankle injury for the final few plays, but apparently x-rays were negative. Targets flowed through the usual three this time. Willie Snead had seven. John Brown had six. Michael Crabtree had four. John Brown caught the end zone targets between them. Since Jackson took over, Brown and Snead have 18 targets. Crabtree has 17. Brown, though, leads with the 31% of the deep throws, 33% of the 12 red zone throws. He's back in the lead for me. He was in the lead for me just sort of from a talent standpoint. But I think he's the only viable stack option with Jackson among the wide receivers. The backfield here is pretty messy. Gus Edwards had 16 of the 26 running back carries for a team high 67 yards, but Kenneth Dixon had 8 for 59, and he scored as well. Edwards actually has seen his snap rate drop each week since taking over 62%, 61.4, 50.6, and just 43.7% this week. He has had only a third of the red zone carries with Jackson taking some of those, so a little bit concerned there, but we really can't go heavy at Dixon either because he played 32% of the snaps. Ty Montgomery played 27%, so to stay away from me in the backfield. They host the Bucs next week, so I'm in on Jackson,
yeah.
Maybe John Brown, probably some John Brown, but other than that, I don't really see who else I can trust.
So next week, it sounds like Joe Flacco should be active because he got in a full practice Friday. There were rumblings he'd be active on Sunday. Let's assume that Flacco is active next week. Can you still use Lamar Jackson in that game?
Yeah, he's tournaments only for me because there's no passing. So if he doesn't run, then the floor. I mean, rushing elevates the floor for a quarterback, but if Tampa Bay can shut him down, I don't really see it yet as a passer as much as I want to with Jackson. So I would still play him in some tournaments. I would probably not have as many lineups as I normally would with Jackson, given if Flacco's active. But I don't think I'd be scared off entirely.
I think I would agree with that one there, and I am okay with that. So let's move on here to the 49ers and the Broncos. And Marquise Goodwin came back. Jeffrey Wilson Jr. got some good usage, but this was the George Kittle game. Kittle had 210 yards on 9 targets. It's interesting. I guess it was the George Kittle half, but he also turned a shorter pass into an 85-yard touchdown, couple of deep targets. If we look at the time with Nick Mullins at quarterback, Kittle has 25.3% of the team's targets. I think the Mullins has been good enough to support a viable tight end for fantasy. So Kittle has at least 70 yards in each of those games except for one. So he is obviously a great play going forward. We'll put a name that price on George Kittle in just a second. Dante Pettis had 7 targets and nobody else had more than 4. He had two deep targets and one in the red zone. Even with Marquise Goodwin being back, Pettis is the way to get cheaper access to this offense behind Kittle, but Kittle's a monster. Jeffrey Wilson Jr., 23 carries and two targets here, and didn't look bad on it. If we look at the snap rate here, it was 86% for Wilson. He played a lot last week, too. He showed last week that he can get work in the passing game, so I like him. And the team's line has been blocking well this year, so he would be, like, from a usage perspective, somewhere in the Philip Lindsay range for me if Matt Breida continued to sit, because he gets a lot of carries, not a lot of targets, but good efficiency. So, like, he's not going to be priced there because his offense isn't as good, but I think that from a usage perspective, he'd be around there. For the Broncos, it was their first game without Emmanuel Sanders, and they looked awful. Case Keenum had negative 4.53 passing net expected points and 186 yards on 42 attempts. I think we got to downgrade everybody here going forward because, like, Emmanuel Sanders is a big piece to lose, and they look terrible. Philip Lindsay scored, but he struggled with efficiency, and he lost some carries to Royce Freeman. But overall, it wasn't terrible. Lindsay had 14 carries and 7 targets. Freeman had 6 carries and 1 target. The 7 targets for Lindsay tied the most he has had all year, and he also played 65% of the snaps, which is his highest mark of the year. I think what we've seen here is that Devontae Booker is dust. It's reassuring that Lindsay will not exit if they fall behind, but with the offense taking a hit, Lindsay is overpriced if his salary stays as high as it was this week. We don't need to jump ship because the usage is still good, but he was just a bit too spendy this past week. At wide receiver, Cortland Sutton disappointed, while Tim Patrick and Deshaun Hamilton got decent volume, though part of that was likely because Sutton had a thigh injury. Patrick had 10 targets, Hamilton had 9, Sutton had just 6, but he caught 2 of those. Patrick and Hamilton both had 2 deep targets while Sutton had 1, though Sutton did get 3 looks in the red zone. Interestingly, Hamilton played 97% of the snaps. Sutton was down at 69% with Patrick at 87%, though part of that was likely influenced by the brief injury exit. I think that the conclusion here is that Sutton will not be a target monster for this team, and it's hard to get a good read on who will emerge given Sutton's injury. I'd probably rank Deshaun Hamilton first for now because I think that he has the best role, the safest role for fantasy, followed by Sutton for the upside and then Patrick, but still a bit of a muddy situation and not a great offense. Hamilton got more deep targets than I thought he would get. So I think I am willing to put him highest on this list for me, and I am definitely at least keeping an eye on him. Brandon, I want to name that price on George Kittle. We've seen the upside here. We've seen the floor is actually pretty steady too. The offense, underwhelming. But what would you name that price on George Kittle at home against Seattle next week?
Oh, yeah. His floor has been good since week 7. So, like, 7 games, he's had at least 8.2 fantasy points.
Which is stupid for a tight end.
Yeah. Seattle's not anything special against the tight end.
Especially on the road.
He's probably, like, in that Zach Ertz range, like 75.
Do you think that's a fair price for him?
I think it's fair. It's probably too high for me to get to just because I prioritize spending up at running back. Although with Kittle and like Kelsey, I think that there's kind of a case to be made just to spend up and get something from your tight end rather than just have duds.
Mm. Kittle is 74. So you were spot on because that's exactly what Ertz was this past week. I think that's appropriate. So I think that's fine for Kittle.
His yards after catch numbers are insane.
It's because he's insane. He's really good.
So according to Next Gen Stats on NFL.com, he's second in yards after catch behind just Albert Wilson among qualified guys. But Wilson has 26 catches. Kittle has 69. And if you scroll down and look for whoever's second with at least 50 catches in yards after catch, it's Adam Humphries at 6.6. So Kittle's a full 4 yards above the next closest guy. And he's gotten, 12 more receptions than Adam Humphries. He's just off the charts.
And he's a disgusting blocker too. Like, this dude's awesome. He's a really good player. I wish I had done the all Big Ten lineup because it would have had him in there. Missed out, man.
And Deshaun, right?
Yeah, it had Deshaun too. Zeke. It had Zeke.
Jeez. So, a winner.
Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jeff Wilson Jr., Brandon. Let's assume Matt Breida sits. What's a fair price for Jeff Wilson Jr.?
Yeah, I love the snaps. He was so entering Monday, he's fifth in snaps among running backs in week 14 behind McCaffrey, who played 100, Todd Gurley, who played 98, David Johnson and Zeke were like 87 ish.
And Wilson's team is much better than David Johnson's, which is weird because the Cardinals beat them twice.
Fair price. I mean, he's probably like a 65, 66 guy.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think you could push like 68, but he's 61. So I think even though Seattle should win that game, it's fully justified to still invest in Jeffrey Wilson Jr. in that spot. So yeah. I'm on board with it. Let's move on here to the Bengals and the Chargers. Brandon, Austin Ekeler looked good again in this game. So maybe the wearing down was not quite as prevalent as Anthony Lynn had hinted. Did lose some snaps here, though. What'd you see in this game between the Chargers and the Bengals?
Yeah, I mean, this is an anecdote, but like, this is just a great example of why I don't really like to buy into things that aren't 100% certain, because it sounded like it might be just sort of a 50-50 split or something, especially with a 14-point spread. But it's a lot closer than that. The Chargers won 26-21, and you know, the split wasn't quite as close as I thought it would be. You know, after those reports came out that he was worn down, you'd think that his, you know, Ekeler would drop pretty far from his 77.8% snap rate. But I mean, it did, but he still played 68.4% of the snaps in this game. He had 15 carries. He had 5 targets. So it's just one fewer opportunity than he had last week when he played those extra snaps, or at least the extra snap rate. Ekeler also had 2 red zone carries and a red zone target. So, you know, I can live with that, provided that his price does not skyrocket. Justin Jackson played 36.8% of the snaps after 22.2% last week. He had 7 carries and 2 targets. No red zone work for Jackson and just 12 yards on 7 carries overall. You know, if Melvin Gordon remains out, it's pretty clear that we should still be prioritizing or and potentially even trusting Ekeler over Jackson. Phillip Rivers finally didn't throw 2 passing touchdowns, but he had one. He was 19 of 29 for 220 yards, but it was the same old story where he got Keenan Allen his. Allen had 5 catches on 9 targets for 78 yards and a touchdown, and then just sort of threw it to whomever else was on the field, because that's kind of what Phillip Rivers does. Since the week 8 bye, Keenan Allen has a 34.4% target share, 10.7 per game. Ekeler is actually second in that span at 14.7%. So it's really just Keenan Allen or nothing in this passing offense for me. They play at the Chiefs in Arrowhead week 15 on Thursday night. Should be a good game, but not on the main slate. The Bengals, I mean, they're just the Bengals right now. They did finally lean on Joe Mixon more. They gave him 26 carries for 111 yards and a touchdown. He had just one fewer carry than Jeff Driskel had pass attempts. Mixon also had 6 targets for another 27 yards. His snaps went back up to 70% after 57.4%. Last week, he is not a full-on workhorse, but he's kind of close. His offense is not good. He's kind of in that David Johnson range. Terrible offense, still getting the majority of the work, but if the touchdowns don't follow, just not going to be a big game, really, for Joe Mixon. Jeff Driskel wasn't good again. 18 of 27 for 170 yards and a touchdown. Tyler Boyd tied Joe Mixon with 6 targets for the team lead. He had a team high 52 yards. Tyler Boyd has a fine 20.4% target share in 3 games with Driskel. It's 7.3 per game. Driskel, though, really can't do enough to make us want to target any other pass catcher here with any sort of confidence, and I'm not even confident in Tyler Boyd. CJ Uzomah does lead with a 21% target share from Driskel, but Uzomah has not scored even 9 FanDuel points in a game yet this year. They do host the Raiders next week, which is a fantastic spot for Uzomah, but that's like a game that only the DFS community can love.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. it'll be worth watching Ekeler in practice this week, because he had another stinger, and apparently that's kind of a thing that he's been dealing with. So
I didn't know that. I know that he had a stinger, but I didn't know that's kind of what's been bogging him down?
I think they mentioned that it wasn't his first one. So it's worth monitoring throughout the week because Melvin could be back too. So that, I'm glad that's not on the main slate personally. Joe Mixon, though, you mentioned he's kind of got David Johnson-esque usage. At home against Oakland, can you use him in that spot? And if so, name that price for Joe Mixon.
Oh boy. Yeah, I can use him, but that's more of a stack sort of situation. So then it has to be just Jared Cook, really. But for Mixon, I guess like 77?
I was going to say 72, actually. Usually I'm higher on Mixon.
Yeah, I'm not exactly high on Mixon.
He's 78. My goodness.
Okay, so I was right, Jim.
Yeah, you were right. Woof. All right, well.
I'm probably not going to pay that, though.
I'll have limited shares, but I can't build around that. That's too high. It's way too high. Because Zeke is 88, so like, no. That's, man.
Yeah, it's too close between the two of them.
Yeah, for that's the way that I'd view that. Like, I'll still use them because they used them a lot. And they'll be at home against terrible defense, but that's about it. Let's move on here to the Lions and the Cardinals. We can get through this one pretty quick. The Lions won the game, allegedly, but did they really? Matthew Stafford threw up 401 yards on 23 attempts. Kenny Galladay was facing shadow coverage from Patrick Peterson. So in that sense, four targets is fine, but I'm worried about the offense and that it may not function, which would hurt him enough even with big market shares. So you can still use Galladay going forward, but I wouldn't trust anybody in this offense in cash. And like, what's the tournament upside here? And they're on the road in Buffalo next week. That's a tough spot. It does help that Zach Zenner took 12 of 30 running back carries. LeGarrette Blount also had 12. Theo Riddick had 6. You can avoid this backfield, and I would be skeptical even if Kerryon Johnson were to come back. So this is a bad team. They're terrible. Additionally, the Lions' defense took a hit with Zicky Ansah sustaining a shoulder injury. It's unclear if he'll miss more time or if it's unclear if it's even the same shoulder, but that'd be another downgrade for a defense that's already pretty bad. The Cardinals were at home against a terrible defense. They scored 3 points. Awesome. David Johnson got 10 targets in addition to his 15 carries, but he had 61 yards from scrimmage. I've never seen someone get this much usage in this bad of a situation. So there are really no comps for David Johnson. He may score, but I'm not sure what his path to a huge ceiling game is. So I'm pretty okay not using David Johnson. In the first game without Christian Kirk, Larry Fitz had 9 targets. Trent Sherfield and J.J. Nelson both had 7. Fitz had 3 of 5 deep targets and 1 of 2 in the red zone. So if you're going at this passing game, it should be through Fitz. But it looks like Sherfield is the next guy behind him. Overall, Brandon, these two teams suck. So we're going to move on to Steelers and Raiders. No need for further analysis. The Steelers had their patented road loss here. What did you see in this game?
Yeah, I probably just saw this coming. The Steelers always sort of play down to their opponent, and they always just, I mean,
you shouldn't have seen Ben Roethlisberger getting hurt.
That's fair. But, you know, we did still see the Juju Smith-Schuster game, and Juju's one of my favorite players, so I'm fine with anything. And, you know, this is why I don't care about actual teams anymore, so I just like when players go off, and it's always fun when Juju does that, which he's done this for the second time in 3 weeks. He had 12 targets on 29 attempts this week, 4 red zone targets, 3 deep targets. That's a pretty juicy usage there. He got peppered on their second-to-last drive, get 4 targets on that drive alone. Almost had like a 60-yard touchdown. Then he broke free on a lateral to give them a game-tying field goal chance, which didn't go too well. But, you know, what are you going to do? Over the past 5 games, Juju actually has a better target share slightly than Antonio Brown at 25.6%. He gets more of the red zone work, but less of the deep work than Antonio Brown. Either way, it's a pretty great workload for Juju Smith-Schuster. My biggest concern is always getting too heavy on Juju whenever they are favored, because he tends to get phased out before Brown does, but that was not the case this week. As for Antonio Brown, he had 7 targets, just 5 catches and 35 yards here, to finish with just 6 FanDuel points after averaging 19.1 FanDuel points per game entering this one since week 10. His target share is down to a non-elite 26.2% for the full year. It's not terrible. I'm not trying to overreact, but he's not a clear-cut number one anymore. He hasn't been for most of the year. We've actually talked about that a few times on these podcasts. It is worth noting that Ben Roethlisberger missed about 30% of the snaps here, but did return when they fell behind again. So I don't think there's any reason that he would miss next week. Jalen Samuels had 7 targets as well. So it's never great when Jalen Samuels has as many targets as Antonio Brown, but it's good for Samuels, who had 64 yards to salvage a dud on the ground. He turned 11 carries into 28 yards. He played 80% of the snaps, so that's the 6th highest snap rate of any back entering Monday. He had 2 red zone carries, but was stuffed on the goal line. Lost a goal line score to Stephen Ridley. Overall, though, great, great workload for Samuels if you're going to get an 80% snap rate and 7 targets. They host the Patriots in Week 15. Should be a great game. I'm sure we'll talk about that one plenty on Thursday. Derek Carr showed something again. 25 of 34 for 322 yards. 2 touchdowns with some concentrated volume. Gave Jared Cook 10 targets. He caught 7 of those for 116 yards. Seth Roberts caught 5 of 7 for 76. Jordy Nelson caught 6 of 7 for 48. But the touchdowns went to Derek Carrier and Lee Smith, so that's not fun. Jared Cook, though, has had 10-plus FanDuel points in 4 straight with 7 deep targets in that span. His workload's actually been very good. His snap rate has trended up from 55% to 72% to 85% the past 3 games. He easily leads the team with a 24% target share over the past 5. As for the other options, kind of no matter how you look at it, there's either no upside or no consistency from these options, usually both. So I can't really target anybody other than Jared Cook among the pass catchers. Doug Martin did sort of plod his way to 32 yards on 16 carries, did score a touchdown. It's worth noting that the Steelers' rush defense has been great when Stephon Tuitt has been healthy. Martin does have 13 red zone carries over the past 2 games, so that's worth noting. And, you know, that Raiders at Bengals game next week, perhaps we can look to Doug Martin if we're trying to get, like, weird. Jared Cook is definitely on the radar for game stacks, but, you know, writing the Raiders off is usually not the worst idea.
Yeah. They've exceeded expectations for the past couple of weeks, and I will give them credit for that. But, yeah. So let's talk here about the Steelers side of things. I agree that we should be a little bit sour on Antonio Brown. Let's say, though, next week that James Conner can't go. What's an appropriate price for Jalen Samuels? Because I think that this is, like you said, pretty solid usage. So what are you paying for Jalen Samuels?
In that game, there's no total or anything because we don't know if Ben's going to play. But if Ben plays, which I'm assuming he does, I think we can get the like 65 on Samuel, if not even higher. But I still would have some concerns because of that goal line vulture.
Yeah, he's $5,500. And I think at that price, with his receiving workload and his rushing workload, he can pay off without a touchdown. Like, he had 12.7 points this week without scoring a touchdown. And I think that, to me, allows me to not worry about getting vultured. So I think that's a very fair price for James.
Yeah, I pointed out the vulture because, like, if he were 7,000 or something,
right,
breaks, but that's pretty cheap.
Yeah, so, I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing if James Conner were to rest up an additional week. We can get some Jalen Samuels in a pretty fun game. Juju, Brandon, are you – so where do you rank him relative to Antonio Brown? Let's just ask – let's put it out there. Where do you rank him?
I kind of prefer him straight up in most spots, and this should be a game. You know, I don't know if there's actually any validity to it, but – the Patriots are going to probably try to shut down Antonio Brown. Oakland's actually pretty good against lead receivers.
But they try to shut down the best asset, Brandon. Sorry, I was trolling.
I was actually going to say that, so you saved me from having to bring that up. But yeah, you'd have to think that they do limit Antonio Brown, and that could lead up like to a lot of open field for
Vance McDonald and Ryan Switzer week, baby. Let's go. Gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, Vance is okay, but he's kind of just okay.
Yeah, Juju is 78 for next week. I think that's a very fair price, and I'll pay it.
Yeah. What would you pay for Antonio Brown? I'm sure you've seen it, but...
Yeah, I think that he's getting the workload of someone who should be priced somewhere closer to 77. But he's 86.
Yeah, I think he's just priced out. I'm going to stack that game, so I'll have Antonio Brown.
For sure,
but
for sure.
Outside of game stacks, I'm not going to play Antonio Brown.
I loved Ben this week, but I still had – I think I was underweight on Brown relative to the field. It wasn't something I did consciously, but, like, he's not someone I actively target outside of, like, game stacks anymore at that price.
Yeah, I mean, when you can play the better receiver for cheaper, you should probably do it.
We're not trying to trash Antonio Brown. We're just – it's a Juju Smith-Schuster love fest.
We'll it's all about Juju. I just love it.
Totally. Absolutely. We solemnly swear that we are not being weird. Let's move on here to the Eagles at the Cowboys, where Amari Cooper done did it again. He finished with 217 yards and 3 touchdowns. Since joining the Cowboys, Cooper has now topped 180 yards twice, and he has gone over 75 yards in 4 of 6 games. The ceiling for Cooper is among the best in the league. From a floor perspective, he has 26% of the team's targets, 31% of the deep targets, and 29% of the red zone targets. So if you're looking for a good comp for him, I feel like he's getting usage similar to Brandon Cooks, maybe. The floor is pretty good. The ceiling is unreal. And that's worth quite a bit in DFS. So I like Cooper a lot. He will be owned next week, but, like, it's justified. Ezekiel Elliott did not score, but he had more than 25 FanDuel points still. That's what happens when you get 28 carries and 13 targets. He's got 22% of the team's targets since the Cooper trade. He doesn't really get creative targets, but they still provide a lot of safety. So it's impossible to knock Zeke Elliott outside of the fact that All-Pro guard Zach Martin re-injured his knee and could not return. Sounds like he's going to miss time, and that would be a downgrade for the efficiency of both Zeke and Dak Prescott. But Zeke's volume is untouchable right now, so it's a concern, but not one that's going to make me totally divest in the offense, as it would be if Tyron Smith were to get hurt again too. The other cheaper pieces worth noting here are Michael Gallup and Blake Jarwin. Gallup had 9 total targets and 5 deep targets. He is over 50% of the deep targets since Amari arrived, and Dak just hasn't hit him, but those deep targets can eventually hit. He'll be a good pivot if Cooper's facing a shutdown corner in the future, and actually next week, with Cooper being likely super popular, Gallup's probably not a bad pivot. Neither is Zeke, but, you know, I think the Gallup's in play. As for Jarwin, he had 7 targets and played 59% of the snaps. He had 3 total targets in the past 2 games, Jeff Swaim. I wouldn't buy into him, but his usage is worth monitoring, kind of in the same lines of Evan Engram, as we discussed before. The Eagles didn't really play all that well, but sent the game to overtime. The problem is that their market shares got a bit more confusing. In the backfield, Josh Adams had 7 of 10 running back carries. Corey Clement got hurt, but Darren Sproles and Wendell Smallwood both got 1 carry. Sproles also had 3 targets, including 1 in the red zone. Sproles led the team with 42% of the snaps, and Adams followed at 40%. If Clement does miss time, it will likely be Sproles and Adams in a traditional passing down versus early down role. This is not a great split for fantasy. So I'm a bit turned off on this backfield unless the script clearly dictates that we should use one or the other. Alshon Jeffrey popped back up to lead the team with 9 targets. Zach Ertz had 8. Nobody else on the team had more than 5, and outside of Ertz, this team's a mess, and it's hard to know who will be the right choice in a given week. Even Ertz, I think his floor has come down a bit, so you can take stabs in tournaments in the right matchups, and I would favor Alshon if you do have to do it against a soft outside corner, but it's a really tough team for DFS, and I am, you know, very turned off by this entire team, especially with how not great they have played. Brandon, we already mentioned Amari Cooper's price. Well, let's assume he's 40% owned next week, which I think is probably a fair assumption. Where do you want to be? Like, what kind of ownership do you want to have on Amari Cooper, just based on your initial first thoughts?
I mean, the usage is so good. I like the matchup. I like the game. He's playing indoors. Price is low. Just knowing me, I'm going to go underweight, but
yeah,
it's tough.
I think I will be a little bit underweight on him relative to the field because I don't like being super heavily into receivers because they're more high variance. But that's not like a knock on him. It's just like that I don't play wide receivers that way. So I think I'll probably be closer to 30% on him. But Zeke, I want to be aggressively overweight because if people are using Cooper, they're less likely to use Zeke. and Zeke's price did not budge. He is still $8,800, and his workload is insane.
Yeah, so love Zeke. I like that you mentioned Gallup as a pivot. He's had 3, 1, 3, and 5 deep targets the past four games. He had an end zone target this week. Pretty sure it was just an overthrow. I think he was wide open. Or not open.
He was wide
open, but he had a step.
Zeke over Dak overthrew him by like 5 yards.
Yeah, I was trying. I don't want to slander Dak, but
Dak had some bad throws, but like he was fine overall. It's
really bad. I mean, so Cooper's had those blow up games, but he's also had, 9.6 FanDuel points and 5.1, 10.5. Like if he gets, even 10 FanDuel points and he's 40% owned,
That's also just how wide receivers go.
Right.
Like that's why you don't go overweight on a wide receiver ever.
Yeah, I'm not
saying yep.
Yeah, so I'm going to be underweight just by default.
Yeah, I will never be overweight on a wide receiver who's 40% owned. That's basically the way I'd play it. Let's move to the Sunday night game. Really tough game, Brandon, for a Jared Goff truther. Goff, he had a rough night.
At least you're a Mitchell Trubisky fan as well. So
yeah, I mean, like no one talks about Trubisky struggling. They always talk about Goff. I'm not tilted about it, but whatever.
Well, they both were terrible in this game. So.
Yeah, Goff was really bad.
I'll say it. Yeah, this was a mess of a game from the start, really. It was a 15-6 win for the Bears. Mitchell Trubisky in his return from a shoulder issue. He looked fine running the ball, but he threw 30 times for 110 yards, 1 touchdown, 3 picks. It was easily his worst game of the season, and that just ruined the pass catchers who already are hard to predict. Allen Robinson was the leader in every category. He had 8 targets, 5 catches, 42 yards. But no other Bear had more than 22 receiving yards in this one. If you look at the market shares from Trubisky this season, it doesn't account for when players missed. But Taylor Gabriel's at 20%, so even that's not great. Allen Robinson at 19.5%. Tariq Cohen, 17.1%. Trey Burton, 15%. Anthony Miller, 13.3%. Given Trubisky's injury, given how much he was not good throwing the ball, given like Chase Daniel tainting the sample and various injuries for the pass catchers themselves, it's basically impossible to have a confident read on this offense. And that's enough for me to avoid it whenever possible. Jordan Howard ran 19 times for 101 yards. Tariq Cohen had 9 for 69, and he had the red zone carry among them. Howard did lead in snaps 54.9% to 42.3%. They kind of alternate, but it's always like a tight sort of 60-40 split. Just depends on the script who leads and who doesn't. It's kind of it's frustrating, but even with Jordan Howard getting this usage, I can't really chase him too much. He's maxed out at 16.7 FanDuel points in a game, so not really trying to chase anything here. The Bears host the Packers next week. I think Cohen might be the only one I have like a modicum of trust in, just because he gets so many targets out of the backfield. Something's happened to Jared Goff, or it's just variance. I'm not sure, but he was 20 of 44 for 180 yards. He had 4 picks, lost 22.45 passing net expected points. He obviously, he played in the cold. He's from California. He doesn't play in the cold often. This might be the league's best defense.
Yeah.
But he was shaky out of the bye in Detroit as well. His efficiency is not quite as great without Cooper Kupp, but I'm still probably viewing this as a buy low opportunity. Unfortunately, they play Sunday night in week 15 again against the Eagles, so I can't really buy low on the main slate. But
question for you quick while we're on Goff, which game was more concerning to you, the Lions game or the Bears game?
The Lions game.
I agree that because like he was indoors against a bad defense. I can understand struggling in Chicago, but the Detroit
one cold. Yeah, I'm not worried about this game. I just was, if he dismantled the Lions or just sort of did what he normally does against the Lions, I would just write this off entirely.
But, combine them together, it's very concerning. I know he had to evacuate his house because of the fires. I don't know if that's just me. I can't explain what's going on, honestly. So
yeah, I mean it's a 2-game sample, so who really knows? It's a bit above my pay grade, and I just.
In Sean McVay, we trust, man. Let's go. Fix my boy.
Yeah. I mean, the target tree here was pretty much the same as usual. Robert Woods had 13. And then Brandon Cooks, Todd Gurley, Josh Reynolds, and Gerald Everett each had 7. Woods, even though it was a down game for the whole offense, got to 9.6 FanDuel points, so he has at least 9.5 in every game since week 2. He's been a high floor play each week. He's had 5, 3, and 3 deep targets his past 3 games. Cooks here played 98.4% of the snaps, but just didn't really come through. And only one of his 7 targets were deep, so it wasn't like they were just sort of, you know, missed deep looks. But yeah, overall, I have kind of no real reason to change my views on the receivers because the usage has been fine. Just hasn't been the results, really, while Goff's been struggling the past 2 weeks. Todd Gurley played 98.4% of the snaps, had a season-low 11 carries, but had 7 targets to get to 7.3 FanDuel points. The work's pretty much unchanged. The carries obviously weren't there in this script, but I'm kind of unchanged on this offense overall.
I think that's fair, especially as we move back home against a banged-up defense. So, you know, if you're playing the full Thursday to Monday slate, I think it's justified to buy back in. But there are some red flags here. Let's talk about the other side of this game because the Bears are on the main slate next week. In general, Mitchell Trubisky has been much better at home this year than on the road, but he was obviously at home in this one coming off the shoulder injury. So can you trust Trubisky next week at home against a middling to a below average Green Bay defense?
No. I have 22 quarterbacks I can pick from.
Jeff Driscoll, Derek Carr.
I was going to let me
Matthew
finish.
Matthew Stafford, Ryan let me finish.
Even if you cut off 12 of them, there's still 10 viable quarterbacks. If I hone it down to like 5, I still have plenty of options to like narrow down. So I'm not going to really force in Trubisky. What price are you paying for him?
75. I mean, like, I think that every quarterback who has some path to a ceiling deserves to be in like the 75 to 79 range.
Do you know his price?
He's 79. I looked. Yeah. But what would you say?
That he's, I would put him at, if I were making the prices, around 75 still, because he's got some rushing upside.
Yeah.
And he's been better at home. But personally, I'm just not really going to play him. I would play him maybe at 75 if I stacked that game, but I'm not really going to pay 79 for Trubisky.
I think you can build an assumption lineup where you assume his shoulder is better than it was this week, and he fits into that because he's at home against a middling defense. So I'm probably going to have some shares, but like it's not because I actively want to get him. It's just under the assumption game that I play. So I think that's where I'm at. It was a bad game. Maybe we just write it off as that. Yeah, it was. That was not great, Bob. But I think interesting week for sure ahead. We've got to monitor, you know, figure out how we want to handle some of these mid-priced running backs like Jeffrey Wilson, like Jalen Samuels, like Derrick Henry. So it'll be an interesting week this week. We'll see how things play out. We'll circle back on Thursday to break everything down. You can subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, the TuneIn app, and of course, Spotify as well. Super convenient to have your music and your podcast all in one space. Brandon, any final words from you? And if not, so where can people follow you on Twitter?
I'm at Kadula13, GDULA13, and just my final thoughts are just digging a little bit deeper into these, like, sort of recent games and try to see what's different and don't just kind of look at the full season trends. It might be better too, but I certainly try to get a leg up by digging a little bit deeper into these recent games.
And we get to look forward to Baker and Sam Darnold on Saturday, so, you know.
You can.
I will.
I'll watch that one Sunday.
All right. Yeah. We'll talk to you again on Thursday to recap it all. I am at Jim Sanes, JimSanes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS as in podcast. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. We'll talk to you again on Thursday to get you set for week number 15 already. Hopefully week 14 went well for you. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast powered by Number Fire.